of the House Oil and Gas Committee for, what is today, it would be the, I believe, the 8th of February, Thursday, 2007. I'm Vic Coring, Chair of the Committee. It is currently at 3:07. And the current members that are present include Representative Samuels, Dugan, Kawasaki, and as mentioned, I'm Coring. Dahlstrom is excused for today as she's out of town, and we're awaiting the re-arrival of Ramris as well as Kurt Olson, who I want to publicly thank, too, for chairing the meeting a couple of weeks ago when we had the overview from DNR. I was out of town on an important trip that precluded me from being here, so thank you for your patience, member of the committee, and I understand the overview went real well, so appreciate the Division of Oil and Gas and making that presentation to us. We don't have any legislation before us. It's been a pretty light committee so far. There's only two bills that have been assigned to oil and gas, which is somewhat unusual, but we hope to see that change, anticipating some gas line related legislation here in the near future by the administration. Not to put any pressure on you, but we sure would like to see something, and we're looking forward to working with you on that and other oil and gas issues for the next two sessions. We have before us folks from the Department of Revenue, and they're going to provide the committee here with an overview in regard to PPT. Not necessarily an overview, but an update on PPT, as I understand it, as to what's been the effect of the legislation so far, where do we stand in terms of the regulations that are being put together, and what are your expectations as far as the future effect of this legislation. So before us we have John Iverson. Did I say that right, John?
Yes, you did.
He's the director of the tax division for the state, and Cherie.
Sure.
And I'm not going to attempt your last name, Cherie, because I'm going to get it wrong, I'm sure. But what would
it's
that be?
Nienheis.
Nienheis, okay. Thank you, ma'am, for joining us as well. And she's a petroleum economist, excuse me, for the state. What I'd like to do is to note for the membership here that as you have questions, feel free to ask those questions. Raise your hand, and I'll acknowledge you, and we'll get those answered if that's acceptable to the folks from the state here. We'll just do it that way as we move through the process here. So, John, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, through the chair. My name is John Iverson. I'm the director of the tax division. I've got with me Cherie Nienheis. She's one of our fine petroleum economists in the division. And we'd like to talk. Several questions were posed a couple of weeks ago regarding PPT. And in speaking with several individuals, they felt that an update on PPT would be worthwhile, along with and kind of a general overview, a little bit of background on PPT. For those who may not be as familiar with it as others, I know there's a lot of experience in this committee with that. But in addition to that, we'd also like to speak a little bit of oil in the state's revenue picture and the tax scenarios with that. So without further ado, Cherie, if you would.
Thank you, John. Again, for the record, my name is Cherie Nienheis. I'm the petroleum economist with the Department of Revenue. And I guess this is a part I'd like to make a plug for our latest book. We have this revenue sources book. It was put out in December of last year of 2006. And it's actually a very useful guide for what revenue sources we believe are coming in the next fiscal year and in two more fiscal years on a comprehensive basis and then on out into the future. So if you don't have one, it's a good publication for you to pick up, and I have actually extra copies in case anybody needs them. But what we're going to cover as far as revenue projections are three areas. First of all, the fall 2006 revenue sources book projection, that's the ones in this book, and then a little bit on an oil price update, and lastly a price and production variance from the fall revenue sources book, because we have had some price and production differences from what we projected back in the book that we put out in December. So turning to the next slide, the first one we have is oil dependency, and this just sums up what we say in our revenue sources book. Basically, these are the sources of revenue that make up the general fund unrestricted revenue, and generally that's referred as the general fund revenue. And you'll see that most of that is due to oil revenue. There are four major parts of oil revenue. One is royalties, and we normally group bonuses and rents with royalties, so there's another fifth line here, but royalties is the major part. That's about $1.5 billion in FY07. Production tax is the next part, and that reflects the PPT that was enacted this past year. And we show about close to $2.1 billion for the production tax. And then next is the oil and gas corporate income tax, which is projected to be about $650 million. And then property tax, which net of the local share is about $51 million. So altogether, and with non-oil sources, for FY07, we project a total unrestricted general fund budget of $4.9 billion, roughly. And that is in your revenue sources book, in case anybody's following along. It would be on tables 2, 5 on page 8 and 9. So you can find all our revenue sources in the revenue sources book on that those two pages. And just to look on the far right column of the slide, you'll see that the oil revenue this coming fiscal year, the one that we're in, actually makes up about 88% of the general fund unrestricted revenue. So that's a pretty significant portion.
Before we continue, I wanted to recognize some individuals, and forgive me, Senator Thomas, for not recognizing you. I've never met you before.
Well, now we have.
Good to see you. I was wondering who the gentleman was that joined us up here. Oh, that's pretty bold.
Guy looking for a chair.
But I would have invited you as a courtesy if I'd known you, so forgive me for not recognizing you, sir. As well as Lindsay Holmes for joining us. Thank you very much. And Kurt Olson, the vice chair of the committee, has joined us as well, so thanks.
Okay, so moving on then, the next slide is the ANS crude oil prices. And what we've tried to do here is to show you what we forecasted in the revenue sources book. And at the time, I have to admit, we had 3 months of actuals, so we didn't exactly have a hard time projecting those first 3 months of prices. But then we actually forecasted prices on out through the fiscal year. And you'll see that the green bars are our forecasted prices. And the blue line that follows that is the actual prices. So we have actually actuals through January, and you can see that, you know, after August, that the prices have somewhat been above our forecast and sometimes been below our forecast. And as far as February goes, February so far, this was as of February 6th, we had a price of $55.94. for February. So that's a little bit above the forecast, but again, February's only we're only a little bit into February, so that could change. Our forecasted prices for the remainder of the year starting in March are down at $52.50. So we've been somewhat conservative in our price forecasting. We believe that that's a prudent thing for us to do as far as forecasting revenues, and I think we've actually managed to follow the actual decline in oil prices pretty well. So moving on to the next page. So what is the variance then in the key factors? The variances are basically what's different from what we forecasted versus what we've actually seen. And oil prices are actually above what we forecasted for the year. We forecasted an average for the year of $59.15. That's for fiscal year 07. And as of February 6th, the average price was $61.20. So that's a little bit over 3% above our forecast amount. So the prices are actually above what we forecasted. And production volumes on February 6th, we had a total of 729,710. That's an average daily production of crude oil and NGLs on the North Slope. And our forecasted production is 739,618. And I'll just note that our production's actually been since the tankers lost their anchor, it's been up around, you know, 780,000 to 800,000 per day through January. So it's looking pretty good at this point.
We have a question from a member, Representative Ramirez.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We heard in Judiciary yesterday through the Department of Law about lawsuits that they're preparing against BP for lost production. And this summer, when we were in a resource meeting in at Anchorage LAO, Mr. Chairman, we talked about flushing, I think, when a field is flush, which is the additional production that you enjoy after capping a field for a little while after the BP debacle. Does this production volume decline reflect the BP driven, you know, deficiency in oil production? Without that situation, would production volume have been as forecasted, or did this, did that incident contribute to the production volume decline?
Representative Ramirez, just briefly, we really, because it's the nature of litigation right now, and it's under advisement by DNR and the Department of Revenue and the Department of Law in terms of actual damages, we can't really comment on damages to the state. I don't think that's where your question was going, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Just volume, production volume. Okay. How much production volume was lost, and is that reflected in the 1.4% decline? Mr. Chairman, my apologies.
Through the chair, Representative Ramirez, yes, I believe the production decline is reflected in the volumes that we have now. I believe we were forecasting some 12% higher than that amount before this recent forecast. So yes, it does take into account the production declines. It's hard to say if we're going to have any more problems between now and the end of May, but if we keep going at the rate we're going, which is somewhere around 750 to 800,000 barrels a day, it looks like we could make our forecast.
Quick follow-up. Thank you. Has there, in fact, been flushing in the field? Did the field become flush after it had been capped for a while because of the incident where we were actually able to see a significant increase in production volume for a period of time after we were able to access that oil production again? Do you know?
Representative Ramirez, through the chair, I don't really know if there's a flushing. We could check with our petroleum engineer and see if he knows. Okay. And if there are no further questions, then I'll turn the floor over to John, who will discuss the PPT.
Members of the committee, through the chair, I would like to just do initially just a brief overview for those who may not be quite as familiar with PPT as others. Then move in to discuss the true-up payment and the projections for the fiscal year 2007 totals, the status of the regulations, and then also I've been in contact with Representative Ramirez's office for some questions that he had that I will be addressing, and obviously, certainly, please feel free to grill me as you see fit as we go through. First, just in general, the PPT tax calculation. The general formula is the tax liability equals the value minus the costs, and then taking that amount times the tax rate, and then in turn that amount minus the credit. In that calculation, the value is the volume of oil and gas produced times the wellhead value, and the wellhead value would be the value on the West Coast less the transportation expenses to bring it up to the wellhead. So less marine transportation deductions, tanker costs, and then pipeline tariffs and quality make differentials, things like that. Costs, capital expenditures plus operating expenditures. And capital expenditures are generally including things like purchase of drill rigs or other equipment, facility expansion, and the like. Those are deductible, and then as you'll see down in the credits, there also are 20% of those also is subject to credit. The tax rate is 22.5% is the base rate, and then there's a progressivity factor that kicks in 0.25% for every dollar per barrel that the net income, in other words, the value minus the cost, exceeds $40 per barrel. So the tax rate increases 0.25% for every dollar per barrel production tax value is over 40. And then the credits.
Excuse me for interrupting.
Sure.
Sir, we have a question from a member. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we then double counting capital expenditures? We're counting them once as a cost and then giving an additional 20% of their value as a credit as well?
And that's your interpretation is correct.
Thank you.
Yes, we do. There is a deduction in the cost side of things, and then that's right. 20% of them are also allowed, of capital expenditures are also allowed. Qualified capital expenditures are allowed.
Thank you.
So in addition to the deduction for capital expenditures, the taxpayer also gets a credit for 20% of its capital expenditures, as you see there, plus 20% of the eligible transition expenditures transition, they're also called transition investment expenditures. And then plus a base allowance for the smaller producers. That base allowance is up to $12 million per day per company, $12 million per company, producing less than 100,000 BTU equivalent barrels per day. And it's actually phased out at 100,000 barrels a day. The full 12 million is 50, as I recall, 50,000. So
we have another question. Representative Dugan?
I'm sorry to slow the proceedings down here, Mr. Chairman. No, if it's true that a committee operates at the speed of its slowest member, we're going to be crawling along here, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, through the chair. Could you give me an example of what an eligible transition expenditure might be?
Representative Dugan, through the chair. The transition expenditures are transition investment expenditures are essentially capital investments that were made 5 years prior to the passage of PPT. So there's a pool of these eligible transition expenditures, say new facilities or an expanded facility has been built. And then that pool, 20% of that pool is taken per year up as long as there are capital expenditures being made in the current year. I obviously didn't successfully answer
your
question.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Could I ask you to try that again? I'm not sure that I got that.
Well, if there's an eligible capital expenditure, meaning a facility has been built, say, before the passage of PPT, before the retroactive date of April 1st of 06, a portion of those capital costs is eligible for a credit in the future. And that and the future being the seven-year period after the act, after the enactment of PPT.
Representative Samuels and then Dr. Dugan.
Thank you. I was going to address the question. I'll just let you know what the thinking was at the time.
Let me know too, please.
It had 18 different variations during our hellish year last year. The original thought in the original piece of legislation was if a capital expenditure was made a year ago, which led to more oil and a higher tax rate, that capital expenditure should be equal to the oil that it is producing at the time. That got eliminated in one body, it got doubled in the other, it did this, it did that. And I believe at the end of the day, we said for every $2 that you spend today, you could count for one of those past dollars. My memory is not fading.
Representative Samuels, that's correct. And actually, it's not a real two-for-one since you get to take 5 years' worth of expenditures over 7 years. But it, in any given year, that's how it works. That's correct.
And that's the last I'll comment on it.
Representative Dugan?
I appreciate that, Representative Samuels, but I think you were far beyond where I am at the moment. So if I understand this correctly, if I am an oil company under this tax regime, I have 5 years or 7 years to count as a credit against my tax the cost of any capital expenditure I might have made in the 5 years prior to the effective date of the tax.
Representative Dugan, through the chair, that's correct. For the eligible, if it's determined to be an eligible expense, that's right. That's correct.
Okay.
And if I could add, it's actually 20% of those expenditures.
Right. I'm sorry, you're right, 20%. But thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then I guess I discussed the base allowance, $12 million, up to $12 million per company producing less than 100,000 BTU equivalent barrels per day. So on the next slide, I introduced the PPT true-up payment. The PPT was enacted to start as with an effective date of April 1st of 2006. So the way that it has worked out is for from then until December of 2006, mm-hmm. the taxpayers have been paying based on the ELF system as mm-hmm. opposed to the PPT system. So in March 31st now of every year, there's going to be a true up. And actually, this is the estimate, well, the true-ups for this year. The estimate of the true-up for that payment, in other words, the difference between PPT and the ELF payment, is estimated to be at $0.95 billion. Mm-hmm. Part of that, $0.29 billion of that, is due to April and May production from last year. And then the rest is June through December of $0.66 billion. And that's what we're anticipating. And as things are looking, that still seems to be. In the next slide, this is a fiscal year 2007 production tax comparison between PPT and ELF. As you'll see, there's a difference there, projected difference of $1.2 billion. Please note that there is, at the bottom of the slide, there's a note here that clarifies that this, it's actually technically not the fiscal year 2007. There's also the months of April and May of 2006, because that's when the tax started. So those are included in that. I just want to make that clarification. On to the regulations. There were publicly noticed workshops in October and November.
You know, but before we go there, Mr. Chairman, if I could just say just one thing. Slide, this.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This slide on the comparison between the PPT and the ELF. When things die down, this may very well be the single greatest legacy that Governor Murkowski left the state of Alaska. I mean, this is a stunning slide. This was such a dominant piece of legislation. And I don't know, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to wax, you know, sentimental or anything, but this was a big deal last year. I mean, this really changes the economics of the state of Alaska enormously, this whole paradigm shift and old Frank Murkowski pays for his jet every other day. We pay for a whole nother jet. I mean, this is an enormous sum of money compared to the ELF system that we were on for how many years? An antiquated old relic?
It's 89, I believe. Something
89 was the last change to it, but it's been in place for a long time.
78 or something.
Good or bad, because some of us disagreed with the tax, but very few of us. I was in a small minority on that one.
But you were looking good there.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman.
With my argument. Thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair. On to the regulations. Again, we did public notice workshops in October and November. Draft regulations were created. And then submitted publicly for comments and a hearing. Some of the issues that were raised in their transfer of exploration credits, in other words, kind of the result of these transfers as to whether certain producers are going to have to sell their credits at a discount. An issue on clarification of lease expenditures. This kind of goes towards the issue of using joint interest operating agreements versus the net profit share lease regulations or some other standard set by the department for allowable lease expenditures. Overhead rates, the argument there is too high, too low. Ring fencing losses. Ring fencing goes toward the Cook Inlet rules and ceiling provisions that affected credits and losses in other areas. And then information reporting requirements. This is essentially how much, what, and how the information is to be reported so that we can process the returns and actually on the monthly provisions as well. And then the inclusions of penalty provisions. The current regulation status, estimated revision times in mid-February, and then it goes to final review by myself and the commissioner and the Department of Law, and then to the Lieutenant Governor's office. The expected implementation of this first round of regulations is anticipated to be, the first raise is supposed to be complete by the end of March, so implementation is anticipated to be in April. And then we are going to be undertaking a second regulation project in the spring, and part of that is going to be to include items like allowable lease expenditures and the use of operating agreements and auditing and those sort of issues.
I just had a question for you. There's a letter that's been circulated from Mahoney and Associates here, and they had some pretty serious concerns about the current proposed regulations here. They feel like they're not reflective of the bill fully that we had passed last year, and they made comments such as it's going to severely affect the industry economically. Let's see here. You've probably seen the letter, so you know what I'm talking about. Would you care to comment on this letter, assuming that you have seen it?
Well, I haven't actually looked at this specific letter. I have reviewed the transcripts of some of the public hearings and summaries of the public comments. My comment on this at this point is this legislation does dramatically affect the taxpayers and the people of Alaska.
Right.
That said, our regulations haven't been finalized yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think some of this remains to be seen.
They talk about the regulations as written causing a tremendous hardship for explorers. It's going to greatly reduce the incentive for explorers to find more oil. And I just would only ask, not to comment on it specifically, but that you take a look at the letter and give it consideration in the course of promulgating those regulations, if you would.
Mr. Chairman, we certainly will.
And perhaps at some point in time, if you could provide the committee with your reaction to the letter, too, that would be helpful.
Yes, we will.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And
that
again,
letter should, by the way, be in everybody's file. If it's not, Jim will provide you a copy.
And
Representative Remmer?
Mr. Chairman, if I can just add, because this is one of the outfits that I railed against when we had our initial meeting with oil and gas, the signatories on this letter are precisely the jokers that won't drill a well in Enana. So this letter doesn't enjoy very much sympathy from me, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman, because mm-hmm. they should get off their drill rig mm-hmm. and drill a hole and get gas into my community. So okay. you'll find it's a very conspicuous list mm-hmm. of signatories to this letter that are whining about not being able to use their EICs. Get some gas okay. and use your investment credits is my advice to the signatories of this letter. So,
great. Thanks for that input.
And Mr. Chairman, and through the chairman to the committee, we certainly do consider all of the comments that we've received mm-hmm. in drafting these regulations.
Thank you.
So, Representative Ramos was kind enough to pose some questions, and I can certainly go through and address those next. The first question is, what new activity has been seen by small producers since the PPT went into effect? The answer to that really is that the PPT itself, it is unlikely that, at least in the 2006-2007, the PPT itself is going to have a dramatic impact, because exploration plans are made well in advance. And it takes years for explorers to plan and then implement an exploration project. Although the tax information in regard to specific taxpayers is confidential, some taxpayers have sought credits under the AS-4355-025 Oil and Gas Exploration Production Credit Program that was enacted in 2003. We are seeing exploration drilling and seismic activity by the large producers and some smaller newcomers in the Western North Slope area towards NPRA, and it's my understanding that there's been a small amount of seismic exploration in the Cook Inlet area, and that there has been a minor amount of exploration in non-North Slope and non-Cook Inlet areas. Since the enactment of the exploration tax credit, the taxpayers have submitted about $253 million of exploration expenditures for approval for tax credit claims of about $91 million, and currently about half of those are under audit. The next question, what is the complexion of oil and gas exploration since the passage of PPT? Are we still seeing the same big three producers, or are we seeing more smaller independent companies doing business in Alaska? What are the names and activities being undertaken by smaller independent companies? Part of that goes to my answer in the first question, that it's unlikely that PPT is directly impacting exploration this year. However, there was a recent article in the Anchorage Daily News that discussed exploration plans of some of the smaller companies, independent companies, like ENI, and I think that may just be any, I'm not sure, but it's spelled ENI, FEX, and ABCG/Brooks Range Petroleum Corporation. And then Anadarko and Pioneer also got mentioned in the article for exploratory drilling plans. Next question. When the state opens the envelope on March 31st and it discovers that PPT did not work, does oil and gas, and in this that was framed in front of DNR, so I'm just going to say tax, does tax have a plan to remedy the problems with the legislature? The answer is, to my knowledge, no specific plan has been made, but a legislative remedy will not be ruled out, and it's something that we'll consider.
Excuse me, we have a question from Representative Dugan.
I'm sorry, are you done with the presentation then?
I actually had one more question, but can field your question.
Let him finish it on. Sure.
Go ahead, finish, okay. And we'll get back to
the chair. Fourth question, what is the estimate for BP's deferred maintenance costs regarding rehabilitating the inline transmission lines? I can comment that BP estimated $250 million in capital costs, that was according to an Anchorage Daily News article. And BP has indicated on its website, BP Alaska has indicated on its website that it will spend a total of approximately $550 million over the next 2 years in, quote, integrity management, end quote, which includes replacement of the 16 miles of pipeline. I cannot, however, comment on losses to the state, obviously due to the shutdown or costs that probably will not be deductible because these matters are under advisement at this time.
Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got three questions on the presentation as a whole. With respect to the revenue forecast, the comparison of performance to the revenue forecast, are we still on track in FY07 to realize the slightly more than $1.3 billion surplus that the governor has in her budget bill for that fiscal year?
Representative Dugan, through the chair, I only know about the revenue forecast. I don't know about the surplus, but we are on track to achieve our revenue forecast prediction of $4.9 billion. So if that's what the 1.3 is built on, then that's correct.
I think it is. Thank you, if I might.
Mm-hmm. Please.
I hate to keep going back to this, but I want to make sure I understand the terms of the tax credits. When we're referring to 20% times capital expenditures and 20% by times eligible transition expenditures, in both cases, is that 20% total or 20% per year?
That's 20% per year.
So I could recover 100% of my eligible transition expenditures if I recovered them at the rate of 20% a year. Is that correct?
Well, and there's also another limit to this under the eligible transition expenditures that they cannot be greater than 10% of your capital expenditures for that year. For the year in which you're taking them.
So I can recover each year 20% of 10% of the capital expenditures?
It's actually, Sherry, maybe perhaps you could explain this a little more clearly than I.
If I may get back to your first question, they can recover 20% of their eligible capital expenditures during the transition period. So for example, and the transition period is 5 years. So for example, if a company spent $50 million each year in the transition period, that would be a total of $250 million, the amount they would be able to have a credit for if they also qualify under their current capital spending would be 20% of the $250 million. So what is that?
I think I may pursue this a little bit more after the committee meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question. If the regulations aren't going to be in place till April, but the first payment has to be made by the end of March, how is that going to happen?
We're just frankly doing the best we can through working, coordinating with the taxpayers based on the understandings that have been reached so far. It's a matter of the amount of time that it's taken to get these regulations out and the complexity of the regulations.
Okay. Yes. I understand that one of the considerations in the regulation may be allowing the taxpayer some period of time to revise their taxes, is that correct?
Well, the regulations haven't been finalized yet. And so
I didn't ask about the regulations. I was asking if there's been consideration given to that question.
Oh, has there been consideration given to that question? The answer to that is yes.
Okay, so that it's possible, depending on what the regulations say, that we won't know the true effect of the PPT for whatever that period is, because there may be changes if there is a period in which they can change their tax return, I guess, is what they'd be doing.
Amend their tax return,
then we won't know until the end of that period what the real effect of the PPT is going to be. Is that correct?
Under the assumption that you've made that,
right.
And again, I can't say one way or the other whether there will be such a period or, but under that assumption, yes.
Well, can I ask you this question? If mm-hmm. the regulations aren't going to be in effect until after the first payment, and the oil companies are going to make the payment based on the understandings they have with you, is part of that understanding that you have with them going to be that they're going to have a period to revise their tax return?
There's going to have to be some, you know, we're going to obviously be reasonable and work out, you know, differences that arise due to the regulations as they come out.
Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
was that yes?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Just to parlay into his question, his last question, how long of a period of time can amendments to a tax return be submitted? How many years out can you go?
I don't know.
Okay.
Question.
If you can find out, just to satisfy my curiosity, I'd like to know that. It's not a big issue with me, but I'm just curious. That was one of my many questions, and I had a list as well. I'm not going to submit it to you because most of them have been asked. Thanks to Representatives Dugan and Ramirez who provided their questions. But to ask one question that remains on my list that has been asked, and that is a statement made by the governor during her speech to the legislature a couple of weeks ago where she noted her disagreement with the legislature on the gross versus net, and that was one of the issues I had last year as well that caused me to vote no on the bill. Effect on potential development, but I was also concerned about the accounting method of you know, looking at it from a gross versus net perspective. Is there any prospective legislation, or will there be any effort on the part of the administration to make that change?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, through the chair, that is a decision that which I simply do not know the answer.
All right. Okay.
I mean, I can't anticipate.
All right. Representative Guerra's bill in our committee that does. Right. Make that change. I disagree with some portions of that bill as far as increasing taxes, but we certainly might take up that bill for consideration given that issue of gross versus net. And I was just curious as to how serious the administration was in pursuing that change.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I personally don't know. I don't have that kind of information.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm assuming that a fix, if mm-hmm. it's advisable and under the governor's determination, will be mm-hmm. presented.
Right.
If that's what is determined by the governor and the commissioner and her staff.
She or the administration may not feel they've got the support in the legislature in light of the seemingly overwhelming support there was for the net concept versus gross, so maybe there won't be any effort. I don't know.
Although, Mr. Chairman, I'd have to point out that it was a somewhat different legislature that made that decision.
True. That's true.
And Mr. Chairman, I certainly can't comment on that.
Yes, I understand. Not to put you on the spot. Are there any other questions from the committee members? Representative Ramirez, I had thanked you and Dugan for your list of questions. I had my own, and you guys had covered pretty much all that I had with the exception of one where we discussed net versus gross. And I had asked them if there was any intention on the party administration to propose that change in light of the governor's speech a couple of weeks ago, and they weren't able to answer that, so we'll see what happens. I guess I can ask you one more question. You've already partially answered this one, but I'd like to delve into this one as we close out this meeting here, and that has to do with the corrosion issues, and it's anticipated by some, and I saw the article on the front page of today's Juneau Empire about the letter that some legislators had submitted to the president of BP Alaska, I think it was, as far as concerns that the expenses associated with rebuilding the lines that were corroded could be deducted. I should know the answer to this, but maybe you can help me. Is it clearly in statute that would allow them to do that if they chose to in fact deduct those costs?
We haven't, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, through the chair, we haven't made a determination as to whether those costs will be deducted.
Okay. You're examining that then? And
that's correct.
Keep us apprised on that as far as your findings, if you would, please. Okay.
Certainly will.
All right. Any other questions from the committee? Anything else you folks care to add before we draw this meeting to a conclusion?
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for...
I do, if you don't mind, I got...
Please.
It's only 10 to 4.
We've only been going for 45 minutes, so we've got lots of time. If you have more questions, comments, go ahead.
I do. This is a great presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I am rusty, Mr. Chairman, on the whole dialogue that we had about what happened as the price of oil receded from the lofty levels that was at when we were crafting this legislation. And I'm trying to recollect the number that was our break-even point. It was West Texas Intermediate, less transportation, whether it was 50, I don't remember it was just a few key numbers, but I don't remember them. My question is looking at the slide, the ANS crude oil prices, the forecast slide right here, I gather that that is the relationship to the slide that shows that to the PPT true-up payment right here. There's a relationship between the forecasted prices and the expectation that the state will realize in the true-up payment from June to December. Can you please provide for the committee members if your forecasts are accurate for price and for production volume, how much we may expect to enjoy from the PPT component versus the ELF measurement through these remaining months of the period that we're in, February, March, April, May, if your projections are accurate for price and for volume, what will that generate for the state incrementally, so that we just, in oil and gas, Mr. Chairman, can better understand the nature of this this tax methodology of PPT. So, because we're no longer enjoying rates, you know, that we had this summer in June, July, and August when the price of WTI was above $70 a barrel. It's now down into the, I think it was at 58 today, and WTI is less than that, less transportation. So I'd like to get a sense of what the PPT as tax methodology is generating in these monthly periods that we're going through shortly. Is that a reasonable calculation? I don't want to task oil and gas. They're pretty slides, but somebody's working hours and hours behind these slides to...
Certainly, Representative Grammers, through the chair. Just to explain a little bit about what these slides mean, the true-up payment is, as Mr. Iverson said, is the difference between the ALF and the PPT tax for the period through the end of calendar year 2006.
Okay.
So beginning with April 1st and going through 2006. That's what we call the true-up payment. Basically, it just means that the companies have been paying their tax based on ELF from that period of time through December. And what's going to happen at the end of March is they're going to say, well, what should we have paid for those months under the PPT, and what did we pay under the ELF, and what's the difference? So that's what the true-up represents. That's the $950 million. Then for January through May, that would be the rest of our fiscal year 07. And when I say January through May, I'm talking about the production months. So production for January would be paid at the end of February. Production for February would be paid at the end of March. So we would go through production month of May 2007, and that would all be incorporated in fiscal year 07 revenues. So if you look at these numbers here on the slide, the one with the PPT and ELF comparison, the bar chart, you can see that it's $1.2 billion above the ELF. Now, the total for the PPT tax for fiscal year 2007 is about $2,067. Okay, so $2,067 million. The ELF is somewhere around, I want to say, 860 or so. So the true-up is making up 950 of that, and the remaining amount is the production for June through May.
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair.
Please. You bet.
That is an excellent explanation. I appreciate that. Here's the question that I have. The way that we designed the PPT, and we have on this committee with Senator Thomas and Representative Dugan and Representative Kawasaki and Representative Holmes, a lot of new members here, so I want to understand it better, and I want to help lend an understanding to my colleagues. The way that the PPT was designed was, it was assumed that when the price of oil was at $70 a barrel, that the producers were making an enormous sum of money, and that the state of Alaska should participate in that. It was equally assumed that because Alaska is an expensive place to do business, Mr. Hurley would be delighted to get up and testify, that when the price of a barrel of oil recedes down into the 50s, in the mid-50s, that the earnings from the various oil companies is less robust, and therefore the state of Alaska was going to realize a less robust tax collection mechanism through the PPT. And so as helpful as this slide is in showing the true up vis-a-vis PPT versus ELF, it's not especially helpful in that you really had two different economies at work here, two different economics at work. One, when price of oil was at 70 some dollars a barrel, and a whole different economic model at work when the price of oil is at $58 a barrel. And this slide isn't helpful in allowing us to see that tax methodology at work at $78 a barrel versus $58 a barrel. And so that's what I'm interested in, is not the aggregate comparison between PPT and ELF, but the specific month-to-month comparison when it was at 78, and maybe 80% of that variance between PPT and the ELF was realized in the summer months of June, July, and August, and only 20% of that variance is realized in the other 8 or 9 months that make up this fiscal year. And that's what I wanted to try to illustrate through somebody working the economics of this, because at $55 a barrel, a WTI, I don't think that the economics of PPT were that much more remarkable than the economics of ELF, and that was one of the things that I recollect that we wrestled with here in resources. So that's precisely what I'm interested in seeing a comparison of. Is that pretty good?
Yes, Representative Rammers, we could probably put something together like that for you if you'd like. And you're correct. The difference between the ELF and the PPT was much, much greater in the periods of time when we were making $65 and $70 for a barrel of oil. And just the progressivity piece, just to go over that for the new members, the progressivity kicks in when the net income per barrel of oil is about $40. Now, back during legislative session last year, we said that was realistically, you add $15 worth of cost, it's about a $55 per barrel of oil that the progressivity kicks in. So whenever you're above $55 a barrel, you will see the tax rate increase. And it, as you go up, it increases pretty dramatically. And actually, in our revenue sources book on page 85, there's a graph. It's small enough that you can't really see the pickup in price or the slope. But at $55, the slope starts to go up pretty dramatically. So that is what Representative Ramirez is talking about. Yes, during those months when the prices were high, we were making a lot more versus the ELF than we are in the price range of $50 to $55. But we are still making considerably more under the PPT.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate that.
Any more questions before I wrap it up? I failed to mention that we've had Gary Rogers in our presence. I don't know him. I haven't met him, so I can't pick him out in the crowd. But, Gary, if you're still here, you're welcome to. Is there Gary Rogers here or perhaps online?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Mr. Rogers is our.
I missed probably 45 minutes of the meeting, but I joined you about 5 minutes ago.
Thank you. I had you on the list here as being present here in Juneau, so I'm sorry for the confusion there, Gary. But if you had any comments to make, you're welcome to do so. If not, we'll wrap the meeting up here. Do you have anything you care to share, Gary, before we?
Well, I had seen some of, I think, Representative Ramirez's questions prior to the meeting, and he was inquiring about the effect of exploration or the effect of the PPT on exploration. Mm-hmm. And maybe you've already addressed this, but we have seen a lot of exploration, but a lot of it has been due to the Exploration Production Tax Credit that was enacted in 2003. And it will be a period of years, you know, months, years, before we see the effect of the PPT occur. I suspect the others have already mentioned that. But since the inception of that Exploration Production Tax Credit, we've seen $250 million submitted for Exploration Tax Credit claims. And I think that's a significant dollar amount. And it also shows it takes a couple years for these things to work. And that's just one thing I'd like to point out, that 2003 legislation is, you know, is working. And that's a measurement of magnitude.
I remember that legislation very clearly, Gary. And I also remember there was a sunset on that, which seems to me wasn't too many years out from 2003. Do you know when that concludes and should be perhaps extended again?
I think it was extended, Mr. Chairman, to 2007, and then the PPT legislation last year, I believe, extended it to 2016.
Okay.
So we have some more years for it to work.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
One thing I wanted to ask of you folks, too, if this is not too complex of an issue here and too timely, involved here, and that would be to perhaps put together a model or a comparison chart or something that would show the effects of the gross versus net issue. I'm not trying to harp on that too much, but I am curious as to the effect of this legislation and looking at it from both angles, and if there's any chance in time throughout the course of the session you could put together some rough numbers or some kind of a comparison as to what would have happened if it was based on gross as opposed to net. I'd sure like to see that. So if you'd be so kind to take that on as a little project for our benefit as a committee, I would appreciate it.
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
And then lastly, you had promised to get answers for a few questions that had been asked here, if you can provide those as well. One was the reaction to the Joker's, the Mahoney letter. I didn't mean any disrespect to the folks here, but I was just having fun with Representative Ramirez's comment previously. But seriously, I would like to see your reaction to that. And the issue of whether it's clearly defined in statutes on the deductibility of the expenses related to upgrading that network of pipes on the slope that were fixed. And then the Representative Ramirez had a question that I didn't fully write down, and I don't recall the specifics, but you said you're going to check back with a petroleum engineer to get that information, whatever that issue was, so please provide that too. So I'd like to thank everybody for your participation. Honored to have all of you here, and looking forward to a real productive session. And those that aren't on the committee are always welcome to join us and participate as well. We'd love to have you here, and thank you, all of you, for your attendance and participation. There is no set meeting for oil and gas next because we have a very light schedule so far. I hope that will change in time and that we can do a lot of business in this committee. It's been a good committee in the past, and I expect good things in the future here. So do thank everybody for your time and attendance, and we look forward to seeing you at the next meeting. So it is now exactly 4 o'clock, and I call this meeting to an end. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.